Hello, everyone. This is Frida Garcia, gender advisor and podcaster at the Inter-American Defense College. And you are listening to the IADC's Women, Peace, and Security Program. Across the globe, heads of state and government are prioritizing the advancement of the Women, Peace, and Security agenda. Addressing this on our podcast are two experts, Professors Brenda Opperman and Vanessa Brown, our hosts for this new program. In this series, our hosts will unlock the power of the WPS agenda, tying episodes to its four pillars: participation, protection, prevention, and relief and recovery. They'll invite guests with whom they'll delve into matters of strategic interest through a WPS lens, highlighting trailblazers and their advancements, but also the challenges, problems, and risks they face. Alongside their guests, Brenda and Vanessa will guide us through the ideas, the opportunities, and the strategies out there for WPS operationalization and institutionalization, so that you, our listeners, can successfully implement WPS principles wherever you may be. This is part two of our introductory episode, where we break down taboos with our experts, Brenda and Vanessa. And we hope you enjoyed as much as we did. Now, on to the show. I think it is time for us to move on to something more fun, and that's the taboos. So I cannot think of any better experts to help me unpack this. I'll do this in a rapid-fire form on my end, but feel free to elaborate on yours as much as you need to. And you can add to the others as well. So let's start with you, Brenda. The first term is gender.
Yes, gender. Oh boy, how not to be liked in a crowd quickly. Just start talking about gender. And so, you know, look, gender, I think for me, having talked about this for many years and worked on it, it makes people uncomfortable. The term itself. For me, it's because of a lack of understanding about, I guess, what I mean and what many people mean when they talk about gender, which is really roles, responsibilities, obligations associated with being a man or woman in society, simply put. And so when we start to talk about that, as we alluded to before, you know, this is really important to understand how people operate, right, in the field. But in any case, because it is kind of a lightning rod of a term, I have found, you know, many years ago, I was working at the U.S. Agency for International Development, and I was their first and only gender policy advisor for Iraq. So this is a long time ago. And I really was not treated well by my colleagues. I mean, many nice people, but when they found out that my role was a gender policy advisor, I really was ignored or not treated well. And I felt like I had a scarlet G on my lapel. And I thought, oh my gosh, I feel like Hester Prynne, and adultery isn't the problem, but gender is. So I used to call it my scarlet G, that would distinguish who I was. And then how they treated me. So anyway, that's all I'm going to say about gender for today.
Thank you. Now, Vanessa, yours is feminism.
The dreaded F word.
The dreaded F-bomb.
The F-bomb.
The F-bomb. And I think, you know, I say feminism a lot. I'm a feminist. I identify as feminist. I identify as a radical feminist within the military establishment.
Oh my God.
And I do so, I know. And I do so very intentionally because I think that feminism gets a bad rap. Feminism is often associated with man-hating. It's associated with, you know, not liking or not admiring or valuing what is feminine. So there's this assumption, if you're a feminist, you can't necessarily be feminine. I think that's a false, that's a myth. That's a false assumption. I think really what feminism is to me, is it's having a value that everyone deserves to be treated equally. Everyone deserves to have access to the same opportunities, the same resources, the same rights. Everyone should have the opportunity to be treated as a valued member of society, regardless of their sex and gender. So I am a cisgendered woman. I'm very comfortable with my assigned gender, assigned sex, and I'm happy with my femininity. However, I'm unhappy with the way in which my society values my femininity. I am unhappy with the way in which society closes doors in terms of opportunities for people who have gender identities like me. I'm unhappy with the assumptions that are made about women in societies. I am unhappy with inequality in societies, fiscally, financially, materially, socially. I am unhappy with sexual and gender-based violence in societies that stem from the valuation of masculinities in men over femininities and women. And so there's this binary that we create in society that creates divisions. It creates this binary where we idealize and value men and masculinities in a higher position with femininities and women in a subordinate position that's complementary to everything that men and masculinities do. So in a supportive position to men and masculinities in society. So I think that feminism really identifies this inequality in the gender system, in the way in which we create gender norms in society, and the way in which we create possibilities, the way in which we create power structures and social relations in society. They're all deeply gendered, and it often positions women in a lower status than men, and it often positions diverse women in different status than men. But it also creates a lot of responsibilities and expectations for particular men in society, and closes doors for men as well. So I think that if you believe in equal chances, if you believe in fairness and justice, then you're a feminist.
Wonderful. Yes, I think that this is the main lightning rod, feminism, for most, especially when you're challenging those that have been in a position of privilege, unbeknownst to them, and then they feel oppressed when people asked for equality. And I think that's all that the two of you have described so far in, you know, this work is mostly about being equal and being treated as equals and having that undergird any of these efforts. Now, you also helped me segue to the next one for Brenda. Diversity, please.
Yes, that is actually a really good segue. Yes, you know, diversity, gosh, what to say about it? Yes, many different forms of diversity, right? You know, race, gender, religion, sexual orientation, ethnicity. There's a lot there. There's all very important, right? But I feel like because we're talking about terms that are really kind of lightning rod terms, diversity is, I feel, is lumped in with gender and feminism as all these, what I like to refer to in the Defense Department as the side dish to the main meal, right? You've got the main meal, which is how we've always done things, right? And who's in charge, right? Who has the power? Who has decision-making authority? And then you've got these other issues that feel peripheral. They are not peripheral, right? As we are learning in terms of, for instance, in the U.S. military recruiting folks, right? If we don't start considering the diversity of people and how to encourage all those different people to join, we are not going to hit our numbers in terms of the number of people we need to join the military. So these impact, you know, whether it's, you know, a gendered issue or race or whatever, we absolutely need to be concerned with these issues. We know that having higher performing teams comes from diversity of thought. Well, where does the diversity of thought come from? You need diversity of life experience, right? So diversity, the D word, that's not a bad thing. However, they kind of tip the apple cart, right? In terms of what used to be, what still is in many respects, and what might be. And for those reasons, they make people uncomfortable, you know, Frida, as you mentioned, you know, privilege. I mean, a lot of this is really power, right? Who's got control? And that's just the way of the world. I mean, we're going to have power dynamics always. It's just as things shift in terms of who has the most and what those people look like and what their backgrounds are, that is shifting. And change always makes people uncomfortable. So diversity, yes, of course, I'm a big supporter, but I also think it's valuable to discuss it in a way that takes into consideration people for whom who are made uncomfortable, by the use of that term. We need to be able to define our terms to let them know, for instance, that feminism is not about man-hating at all, right? So everybody relax. Right? Gender is not this horrible thing of, you know, women taking over or gender, what is that? Or allowing, you know, boys and girls to do from the opposite or whatever. It's not necessarily that. So let's just have a discussion. Let's define our terms. I'm sorry, I'm a lawyer. We love to define our terms. Let's define them and let's have a discussion. And let's dispel some of the myths associated with these terms or the fear that is... If people are uncomfortable, it comes from fear. And what it might look like if we consider diverse perspectives. And let's just all sit down and have a drink and relax and figure out our way forward, because it's only going to help all of us, I would argue, have a better life.
Exactly. And that is why I wanted to close with these terms, because we need to really understand them and have everybody feel comfortable with these conversations that you're going to have with your guests too, where you will bring this up and nobody needs to get stuck or turned away by the use of one of these terms if they haven't, you know, really understood how we're approaching them and how it's really... It's harmless, and it really pertains to everyone, and it should, at least if nobody wants to be in the dark about what's happening around them all the time, everywhere. But okay, now closing with another easy one for Vanessa. The P letter, patriarchy.
Down with patriarchy. You'll hear that a lot. And so what does that mean? What does this mean? What is patriarchy?
Mean? What does it mean, really?
I feel when I was going into my undergraduate degree, patriarchy was a very frightening word because I just didn't understand what people were talking about. What do you mean down with patriarchy? What is patriarchy and how does it affect and impact my life? So I think very simply, as Brenda was alluding to earlier, patriarchy is about thinking about who historically has had power. And so who gets to create the rules? Who gets to create the systems? Who gets to create our structures in society, our laws? Who has the lion's share of resources and opportunities in society? And what groups become idealized in society? Typically in patriarchal society, those groups that are idealized are men and of a particular idea of masculinity. So they fit this particular societal norm of what masculine, what right looks like when it comes to being a man. And so patriarchy is bad for men. Patriarchy is bad for a lot of men because it's really hard to meet this fictitious ideal. It creates a lot of pressure on men. And I'm a sociologist. I'm not a biologist. But I'm pretty sure it you know, creates those responsibilities to the detriment of men's health and wellness.
Yes.
I think that men in particular have a lot to gain when thinking critically about patriarchy, when thinking critically about what men stand to gain from feminism. Because feminism is as an articulation of what patriarchy is, and a commitment to doing better, doing things differently, making the world an equal, more safe, and more fair and just place for everyone, including men. And so when we think about patriarchy, we can come to think about, you know, who is most likely to be in positions of power in the government, in our laws, in our education systems, in our prison systems, in our healthcare systems. Who has the power? Right? And then we go down from there. Okay, well then, who is disenfranchised, disempowered from that relationship? Right? So patriarchy is really about identifying who has power and how that came to be. And so when we think about down with the patriarchy, you know, we're thinking about how do we create more equal societies? How do we locate inequality and inequities in societies and make everything better for everyone? Because historically speaking, men have had a lot to gain from the advent of gender perspectives. Historically speaking, you know, things like parental leave and elder care have helped men. So we're really raising the status of everyone while we're identifying these pockets of inequality that exist. And by the way, it's not pockets. It exists everywhere. So if we want to change a culture within the military, if we want to change the legal system, we basically have to change the way we think about how we do everything. And that's a big task, but it's also a great opportunity. And so I think national action plans on women, peace, and security get to the heart of why this matters very deeply to global peace, why this matters very deeply to who experiences conflict in what ways, and why this matters very deeply to creating fair and equal societies before the advent of crisis, and also to prevent conflict in the first place.
Absolutely. And we have time for one more comment, if you would like to add to that and bring it home, Brenda, before we wrap up.
Yes, as you were discussing patriarchy, Vanessa, yeah, I was coming back to what I know, and I will state that women, peace, and security, it's an analytical tool, right? An analysis. It's a phenomenal thing to analyze something, you know, not to death, not forever, not every day, all day. I mean, that's a little nauseating, and there is Netflix. But in understanding the world in which we operate and live, right, we like to analyze things. And women, peace, and security is effectively an analytical tool that allows us to see the world, not just the security sector, but to see the world through different lenses. And so that alone makes it an invaluable tool, not just for the Defense Department and other elements of government. I would say for all people, right, is to be able to take this, to provide a tool to see the world differently, to see where there might be opportunities to do better things, to do things in a more effective way, to see gaps, whatever those are. That's always kind of a negative. Something's missing, to fill it up with something better. Yes. So I guess I would just leave us with that, with this very interesting conversation for me, at least today, is that let's just look at it as an analytical tool. You will make your own decisions based upon your analysis using this tool. They will be different than my conclusions. They will be different than Vanessa's conclusions and Frida's conclusions. But it's a tool that is valuable, and we should use it at least once in a while.
So with that, thank you so much, ladies. I will see you again soon.
It's been a real pleasure. Thank you, Frida.
Thank you, Frida. Onward and upward.
Thank you for listening to this episode. We hope that you will subscribe and tune in as we share more insights and explore women, peace, and security from various theoretical and practical perspectives. This podcast is a production of the Inter-American Defense College. The hosts, guests, and IADC team receive no financial benefits for their participation. The ideas and opinions presented in this podcast are those of the participants alone and should not be taken to express the views of the institutions or governments they represent. To learn more about the IADC and our Women, Peace, and Security program, please go to our show notes for links and resources. You can also visit us at iadc.edu.